positive step in all this, because this is an attitude, I believe, that will help or hinder us all of our lives, depending how we come out on it. Now, what happened here, and God was saying, this is ridiculous. He said, you're saying that the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. I suppose you know what sour grapes taste like. We have grapes at home, and sometimes we test them a little early, you know. We're kind of ready for them, and so we taste one, it's still sour. It does a little pucker thing to your lips. They were saying here, actually it does it to you because you ate it, right? They were saying the fathers ate the grapes, but the children are having the problem with the taste in their mouth. And God said, this is not the way it works. It isn't this way. It just doesn't work this way. We'd like to talk about taking personal responsibility for our actions just a little bit here tonight. There is a dearth. There's a problem with folks having a problem, making a mistake, getting involved in sin, and then trying to pass it off on someone else. You ever done that? I guess I'll have to be honest first of all, right? Anybody ever do that? You know, it's the kind of thing that happens, isn't it? We're kind of built that way, naturally. Sometimes it's using the actions of someone else as an excuse or justification for my wrong decision or action. And so sometimes we do something wrong, and to try to get out of it, we blame somebody else. Or we'll say, well, I did it because of this person, that he did it this way, and it made it real hard for me, and so now I'm going to do it this way, and I feel justified. These are the kind of things that happen often. God is saying here that there is a responsibility for each one of us, for our actions, the things that we do, we're responsible for. Can't blame it on you. If I started out a half hour late for church and I was late, well, it was that tourist from Massachusetts that was dawdling around in front of me the whole way down 322. You know, we can do that kind of thing, and we do. We kind of blame those kind of things on other people. We have lots of examples in the Bible of this kind of thing happening. Remember the excuse Adam made to God? After him and his wife ate of the fruit of the tree, this woman that thou gavest me, she gave me. Aaron to his brother Moses, when Moses came down off the mountain with the Ten Commandments and found the children of Israel worshiping idols, I cast it into the fire and this calf came out. Interesting, isn't it? Saul, when he offered the sacrifice without Samuel, he was supposed to be waiting for Samuel to offer the sacrifice, And he couldn't wait any longer. When Samuel came on the scene after the sacrifice we made, he said, I forced myself. A little later, when Saul was commanded to destroy Amalek, Samuel again took him to task. And Saul said, I have obeyed, but the people took the best of the sacrifice. They took the best of the cattle to sacrifice. He was responsible. His problem, but he blamed it on the people. And there's a lot more modern day examples that we could take a look at. And I suppose you're thinking of your own examples. I had to think of a few. You remember that lady who spilled her coffee over herself in McDonald's and sued McDonald's for burning her leg or something? Coffee was very hot. She sued McDonald's for it. Today I'm told there's what they call a Twinkie defense. There was this man who robbed the bank and got in trouble for it, of course. And his defense was that he ate Twinkies just a bit before. And he was a little hyperactive, I guess, or something. We have homosexuals who want to blame AIDS on the government because they didn't spend enough money for research. Or because God made them that way. There's the example of the college student who was charged with plagiarism. He sued the college, and his defense said, and he was a schizophrenic. His defense was that one of his secondary personalities wrote the paper without his dominant personality knowing it. I don't know how they think these things up, you know? Now, we laugh at these things, and yet, and this is where America is going, you know? This is the kind of thing that's happening out there. We say, it's ridiculous. And yet, sometimes we find ourselves doing some of the same kind of, some of the early on stages of the same kind of problem, and we don't catch it. I would like to encourage you, all of us, but especially as young people, that you take responsibility for your actions. All right? It would have been much better for Adam just to say to God, when he was confronted with his mistake, his sin, he said, "That's right. I'm sorry about that. I'm responsible. I'm the head of this home. The buck stops here. I'll take responsibility. I'm sorry for it." Much better. Much better outcome. Aaron to Moses. "Yes, Moses, I messed up. The people put a lot of pressure on me, and I should have just been a man and stood up and done what's right. But I didn't, and I'm sorry about it." Saul, if he would have offered, or if he would have confessed, repented, instead of saying, "I forced myself, it was the people," as a king, he should have just taken responsibility and said, "I'm sorry for not doing what I should have done." And that's what I'd like to encourage you as young people, and older folks as well. We make mistakes, and the easiest thing at times is to try to push it off on someone else so that it looks better for us. Well, the fact is, that doesn't change a thing. And just because I ate the grapes doesn't mean that I can blame it, I can push that off on someone else. We're responsible. We're responsible people. And I would like to encourage that strongly tonight, because if you want to be a man or a woman who God is able to use in a mighty way, in a good way, someone that's upbuilding, someone that's going to count in life, then you're going to have to learn to take responsibility. And when you do something wrong, I just take responsibility for the wrong that I've done. I don't push it off on someone else. It's very important. We are responsible for things that we know. We're also responsible for things sometimes that we don't know. You ever get caught going too fast in a place where you didn't realize the speed limit was what it was? The don't know excuse somehow doesn't always work, does it? Doesn't always work. The law deems you responsible because you could have and should have known. A quote from A.W. Tozer. "Not only are we responsible for the things we know, we are also responsible for the things that we should have known and could have known if we would have cared enough to find out." Personal responsibility. I was challenged by that quote, to think that if I care enough, you know, we call ourselves Christians, we want God's will. Do I care enough to seek God with all my heart so I know what He wants me to do? Do I care? And if I don't care, then I'm still responsible. That's the catch there, you know? We claim to be God's children, and yet we sometimes get a little lax on following Him. I do. And it's our responsibility. One day I will give account for my life and the way I've done things and the choices I've made. Let's take responsibility. Now, we'll go on to the next part of the message. But don't forget what I said, because taking responsibility is something that's very, very important for young men and young women who are looking for a life's companion. There's a lot of Well, I don't know. What do you think about when you think about a life's companion? I know I was, I think I took courtship fairly seriously. But you know what, looking back, I think I was pretty naive about everything. Tonight I'll have to give you my story a little bit, I suppose, so that you know why I am where I am. And well, it's a little bit like preaching a message home. Some of you know me fairly well, and you were around when all that happened. So if you want to add something to it later, I suppose you would have that option. So as I think about a life's companion, my wife is here with me tonight. Our two youngest are here tonight. We're kind of dribbling in here. By tomorrow, most of us should be here, I think, Lord willing. So look back on the blessing that courtship and marriage is and has been to me. All I can say is I thank the Lord for those blessings. And they are ongoing blessings. And you know, there's some principles that were implanted in my heart that I embraced and didn't really realize why I embraced them, and didn't know all the reasons why. And yet, they turned into a tremendous blessing. A blessing that I didn't realize how big a blessing it was till after we were married. And even today, I'm still realizing some of those things, I'm sure. What I'm trying to say when I say this, as I'm saying this, is that this is a very, very important time of your life. Nathan's encouragement tonight was very, very fitting. And I really appreciate that platform to work from. A prepared platform there. So I think about courtship and marriage. I have a lot of good memories. A lot of good memories. We enjoyed our time together very much. Our children. I've discovered that things have changed a bit in how things are done. And when we tell our children how we did some things, sometimes they smile a little bit because things have changed a little bit in the last, it's about 25 years now, I guess, a little more. I'd like to put a few guiding principles in place as we think about getting married, goals for marriage. And I think these are important ones that we need to keep in mind. I know many of you young people probably aren't thinking, there's quite a number of you probably aren't thinking so much about this yet, but I know that at your age, it's there, and to a greater or lesser degree, you're thinking about it. Because, and so we want to look at some goals, some principles as we think about marriage. And I invite you to turn to Psalm 127 for the first one. Psalm 127, verse 1. It says, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain." And then just down to one chapter, to verse 3 in 128 there. As we think about a Christian home, this is a beautiful picture. "Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house. thy children like olive plants around about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. Now, if you're not thinking about marriage and you're not thinking about children, then you shouldn't be thinking about courtship. This is how it's going to be for the man who fears the Lord. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 15. And did not he make one? Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and wherefore one? That he might seek a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. We'll use those scriptures as a backdrop for a few principles I'd like to outline just now. One is that there must be an honor for authority. As we think about our relationship to God, we are under God. And as we think about asking young men, as we think about asking a young lady to become a part of our life for the rest of our lives, it's a very serious, very important step. It's a step that needs responsibility. It needs taking responsibility. I have six daughters, and I have one son. So this message is pretty important to me. You know, there's something about a father and his daughters that's pretty special. And when I think about a companion for my daughters, I think about that pretty seriously. Because I've been around long enough to know that there are young men who have taken young ladies for a ride. And it happens time and again. We know that. So, in this young man, and these are qualifications, I suppose, but there must be an honor for authority in both sides if it's going to work well. Somehow, if I cannot somehow relate to my authorities in a proper way, it's going to be very tough for me to exercise authority in a way that's going to work in my home when that happens. And so it's very, very important that I have a proper respect for authority in my life. The second principle there, let's turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verses 3 through 7. First Thessalonians 4 and verses 3 through 7. Purity in our hearts and minds is something that's very important. It's something we're striving after. Certainly there are temptations, and sometimes we struggle, and sometimes we fall. But purity of heart and mind is a goal, a desire, and it should be something that we're realizing. Verse 3. For this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that ye should abstain from fornication, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles which know not God, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother, and I'll insert, or his sister in any matter, because the Lord is the avenger of all such, as we also have forewarned you and testified. Purity of heart and mind is something we need to strive after. We need to seek after God with all of our heart. And then there's another principle I'd just like to address just briefly, and that is the one of just decency and order. Brother Nathan mentioned that thought tonight. Just the thought of sensibility, of carefulness, of how we live our lives, possessing our vessels in sanctification and honor, knowing how to live, knowing how to respond to each other, knowing how to relate to each other. There are danger zones. There's a good way to do it, and there are ways that we get ourselves into trouble as we take that kind of approach. We'll look at them just a little bit later. So keep these principles in mind. Honor for authorities, maintain, struggle for, work for purity in your mind and heart, and be discreet and sensible as we approach these things. Maybe that wasn't real clear, that discreet and sensible. Here's what I'm thinking about. We had a friend, a couple that we got to know at Faith Mission. We worked there as single staff. And they adopted a young man, a boy, a baby, I think it was, actually, and he grew up in their home. He had a problem. He had lots of problems, actually, and ended up leaving home. Here the other week, he ended up in a homeless shelter, just about the end of the road, we thought. But only discovered that he found a lady in the homeless shelter, about 10 years his senior, whom he decided that he was going to get married to, and so he got married to her. Of course, he had no plan at all in mind, no plan. They were living in a homeless shelter. How was he going to provide for it? Didn't have a job. Where was he going to live? In the shelter? Somehow things were not thought out. This was not a sensible plan at all. And we have to look at this because life is not easy, not always easy. All right? Most of us aren't born with silver spoons in our mouths, you know? We have to kind of work for things. And I've discovered that, and I think all of us are discovering that life is a bit, making a living can be a little more of a challenge than it used to be for our parents, maybe. And so we need a sensible and a decent plan as we prepare for these things. Now, one thing that I'd like to share with you, and this is for the parents as well, but it's also especially for the young ladies. I believe it's very important that you allow your father to guard your heart. Most young ladies, if they're thinking, they've got their heads screwed on fairly straight, they're going to like this one. Because there's something about deflecting attention over to dad and putting it all over his shoulders that feels really good to a lot of young ladies. And so I'd like to encourage that. It really is a blessing, especially for the young lady. Now, it's a bit of a load for the dad sometimes. But we do it. We do it gladly, because we care. We care about our children. We care about our daughters. And so there are steps we need to take, and there are questions that need to be asked, and there are commitments, I believe, that need to be made as we allow that kind of thing to happen in our home. You know, I guess it wasn't till after or during or over the time after the wedding of our daughter that I realized how big a gift I got from my wife's parents when they gave me their daughter. Somehow I didn't quite realize that till I gave our first daughter away. Allow your father to guard your heart. Young man comes asking, send him to dad. That's the way it should work. And I believe a young man worth his salt, who really cares about doing the right thing, is going to ask a young lady's father if it's okay before he does that kind of thing. I really appreciated that in our experiences, and I would just really recommend that. Never engage in the pre-dating game. I really appreciate, and I think it's very fitting, if a young lady really doesn't even know that a young man cares about her until she finds out officially. Somehow I think that just works out really nice. You know, if things don't work out, then you've already got your heart in it. You've been doing the predating thing, and a date is just what everyone's expecting already. It makes and brings some problems sometimes that you could avoid had you done it a bit differently. I'd like to put this plug in for dating couples. To those of you who aren't dating, of course you're not dating if you're not that the couple, I suppose, but you have a couple in your midst. And you know, I've noticed, and somehow this doesn't do the right things to me. I have noticed that they get teased tremendously. I mean, they're not dating more than a few months. Oh, you think about getting married yet? You ever hear that? It's not right. Don't do it. You're putting them into a situation where very, very uncomfortable. It's rude and it's just plain not necessary. Don't do those things. You know, we talk about purity and how important it is and how we want our young people to be pure, and yet at the same time we're teasing them mercilessly about things they're not quite ready for yet. Let's not do those things to each other. Avoid chat lines, casual meeting places. They'll get you into trouble. Let's talk about qualifications for partners just a bit. We had some of your young people were at RBS, at Regional Bible School, last winter. And we had a brother who was teaching a class on various things relating to life. And he had one on courtship. And in that class, they broke up the students. They had the fellows over here and the sisters over here, and they broke them up into groups of about six. Sisters groups, they weren't mixed groups, but the fellows would go off in about six different groups, I think it was, and same with the girls. And they were supposed to bring in some qualifications. Fellows that give some qualifications for the lady you'd like to marry. And sisters, qualifications for the fellow that you think is the kind of fellow you would like to marry. And there were some very interesting things came out. I'd like to share just a few of them with you. Let me share a few others first, and then I'll get you a bit of that list. All right? For the man, he should be honest, virtuous. He should have a good relationship with his father. He should be teachable, submissive. Now I realize young men still have some growing up to do, but he should have a certain amount of maturity. He should have a level head. It should be obvious that he's a sensible person. Girls don't want to get married to someone who's can't think for himself. Can't make wise choices. You know, when a girl promises to marry a young man, she's taking a certain amount of risk. She's putting her whole life into his hands for life. And so if this young man is not sensible and he makes poor choices and he doesn't, that's what she's promising to become a part of or to become under. And that's scary. He should have good character. He's the kind of person who's not laughing at off-color jokes, or making them, for sure not, but he needs character. He needs to be the kind of person who can stand up and do what's right, even when it's not easy. You're going to face those kind of times, young men. You need to be willing to do what's right, even if it's not easy, because it's not always easy to do what's right. And so he needs to have a good character. A leader. These come off the list here now, and they were quite interesting, I thought, for the fellows, especially. He's one who's able to wait. And you know, sometimes we think, we men think, that the nice shiny car or pickup and the things just right are what's really important. For the young lady, who's worth her salt, that's not always true. That's not true. In fact, there was one little quote came through from the one group, and they were anonymous because no one knew what was written, which made it nicer, I suppose. But this one came from the girls about the men. It said, "We want more honey and less money." You kind of figure that one out. All right? More honey, less money. And that's really the way it works, isn't it, men? Our wives aren't so concerned about having things just right as they are taking time for them and talking and doing things that are important and to them. They are young men who need to... the ladies are saying, these young men need to treat women with respect. They want to be treated with respect. And we owe them that. We owe them that. Young ladies, it's important that you're the young man that you're thinking about spending the rest of your life with has a good relationship with his mom. If he can't treat his mom with respect, if he doesn't love his mom, it probably won't happen for you either in the long run. Trustworthy. Loves children. Able to talk about God. Recently I heard about a courtship that the young lady was not comfortable because the young man, after I think about 4 or 5 dates, still had not gotten around to having family devotions in their date, and it was pretty important to her. That's important to women. That's important to the right kind of women. They don't want men who flirt. They want men who respect authority. They want men with manners. For the ladies, there was some interesting ones as well. And we're going to keep going here, but I have a few I'd like to share with you. You kind of have to understand a bit of the history of RBS to understand this one, but most fellows, if they're thinking straight, don't like high-maintenance women. And I don't know if you know what that means or not. I think you do. You know, there are. I have discovered I'm not sure how I ended up this way. I don't have a high maintenance woman. In fact, she's a lot lower maintenance than I am. And I didn't realize that could have been such a big deal when I was looking for a wife. Somehow it happened to be part of the package. It was a tremendous blessing. But I have noticed women who I would actually, I tell you, I would hate to be their husbands, I think, because I would have a hard time. I'd be working from dawn till dusk just to pay the bills, I figure, from the things I've noticed. And that sounds funny, but you know, when you get into married life, and there's not enough money, this is one of the biggest stresses in married life, is finances. And so, if you want to minimize your stresses, make sure that the lady you're looking for doesn't spend money freely. Doesn't spend money like it grows on trees. Because don't forget, everything she spends, you're going to have to earn. Unless she has a very, very rich father. But I wouldn't count on it. meek and quiet spirit. Men don't like flirts. You know, there's a lot of things we could say. We got to keep going here. I think there's enough said there. Men, when you're asking a girl, include the parents in your plans. I've had a little bit of experience in that line. And so I'd just like to encourage you, just to share with you. If you're thinking about a certain young lady, make it a matter of prayer. Make sure that your heart's right. Make sure you're ready for this. This is a big step. This is a responsibility. This is asking for the hand of someone who's going to be willing to move alongside you and be with you the rest of your life. And so this is something big. Not only that, you're asking this girl's father to allow you to have his daughter. And that's a big step. That's a big step. That's got a lot of weight to it. And so take your time. And then when you feel the time is right, the Lord is leading you, go see that young lady's father and make sure it's okay with him. And then once that's clear, he gives you the green light, you go from there. I think that's a tremendous way of doing it. I have appreciated that immensely. It just feels so right. You're together. Fellas, you give the girls time. When you ask her for that first night out, that first evening together, whatever it is, don't come across by saying that I've been praying about this for the last year and a half, and the Lord has shown me that it's the right thing to do, and can we get together tomorrow night? You had a year and a half, you know, and she's just starting to think about this. So take time. Be sensitive about these kind of things. Proper dating practices. Determine from the start that you're going to be pure. That's very, very important. You know, that is one of the blessings that have come, that I've experienced, that I've realized because of nothing that I've done, really. In the New Order Church, my Uncle Jonas was a bishop there, and I well remember many times, time after time, he would encourage us young people to keep a pure relationship with each other. Hands-off policy, he called it usually. And it's a scriptural policy. The Apostle Paul says, it is not good for a man to touch a woman. And that's exactly right. We get involved in those kind of things, there's no convenient stopping place. And many of us have seen the problems that come out of that kind of games. Girls, if the young man you're spending time with insists that he has to show his love for you by handling you, I would pick up and run. You're in a very, very dangerous spot. You know, young men, I think it's good for us to think about this. Treat the sisters the way you'd like someone to treat your sister. Or your mom, if you don't have a sister. Kind of changes the picture a little bit, doesn't it? Don't forget that until you marry the young lady that you're spending time with, she is not yours. And the problem with handling each other, with loose courtship standards, is that before long, you have a situation where instead of respect and honor growing for each other, there's a disgust and disdain for each other. Because that kind of liberties breeds hatred and disrespect. As I was talking about my brother, my uncle Jonas, and we heard these things time after time, and I guess I never quite realized till later the kind of conviction and forethought that probably went into all that. You know, for you sitting in the back, it was a generation before us that stepped out of the older Amish church because of some of those practices. Impure courtship. Some of those things were what brought them out of the Amish church. And my generation then reaped the blessings of all that without really realizing the cost that was involved in taking a stand for it. We're enjoying those blessings right now. Our generation is, I believe. But I'm concerned. I'm concerned that I am not putting enough of emphasis, enough of time, enough of effort into passing that on to the next generation. And even in our circles, we're seeing a deviation from that course. We're seeing young folks getting into trouble because of their courtship practices. And you know, let me back up just a little bit. It is a very, very beautiful thing to see a young man and a young woman come to the marriage altar with pure hearts, pure lives. They've kept themselves clean. It's a blessing they don't realize, even the kind of blessing that they have. You know, we were married about 3 years when someone very close to me had to get married. And I still remember that. I still remember the deep sadness, regret, as I thought about that situation and what could have been. And I also remember the overflowing gratefulness for the gift that I experienced. The blessing. And you know, I realize, and I want to honor the older folks in our circle here tonight in the congregation here who were man enough, in spite of the fact that you had a difficult situation, some of your experiences in your youth were not what you wish they would have been or could have been, should have been, but you were man enough to get up and take a stand for your children. I appreciate that. I want to commend you for that. Because it's because of that that many of us are experiencing the good things that we are today. And I'd like to extend that challenge even to our generation then, and on to the next one as well. Listen, it's a lot harder for you to tell your children how to have a godly courtship, a pure courtship, if you're not willing to make that sacrifice yourself right now. Make that commitment. It's not a sacrifice, actually. It's a commitment. And it's the kind of thing where I'm willing to say, okay, Lord, I'll do it your way. I'm not real sure why it should be this way, why it has to be this way. It doesn't feel like it needs to be this way. But because you say so, I'm willing to do it. And as we do that, we sign on that dotted line there to that commitment. We are actually ensuring a blessing that we won't get any other way. So it's not a sacrifice. It's a payback. Serious payback. You want a good investment? There you go. And it's not going to cost you much except a little bit of self-sacrifice. A little bit of self-denial. And it will pay you dividends for the rest of your life in your marriage relationship. And not just that. If you never get married, it'll pay tremendous dividends as well. Purity always does. Girls, be modest. The way you move and the way you dress does something to the men. And so help us out. Commit together the kind of standards you're going to have. My wife and I made a commitment that we were going to practice hands-off policy. I think it was the first, one of the early deeds anyway, first or second, I'm not sure. And that commitment stood us in good stead throughout. There were times when you don't feel like keeping commitments, you know? You don't feel like doing what you should do. But if you've talked about it, it makes it much easier to do what needs to be done. And so I would encourage that very much. Spend time in the Word on your dates. Pray together. It's very important. Keep your dates, or keep two places that are accessible to others. Park cars, locked doors in rooms that it's just the two of you are not very safe. Working through problems. Well, as you're spending time together, sometimes, and this is one of the problems with reading romance novels. The Grace Livingstone Hill books used to be a big thing. I think they're still around. And I don't know if there's still a problem with some of us or not. I would encourage you not to read that kind of stories. In fact, you really don't need to read them. You know how they work. The first chapter, a young man meets a young lady. In the next chapter, they get to know each other better. In the last chapter, they're happily married ever after. You know, that's the way it works. And it's Mr. and Mrs. or Mr. and Miss Perfect. Everything's done just right, and everything's works out nicely in the end. But you know, the young lady's going to be reading that kind of stories. It's going to be really tough for us. Because we're not Mr. Perfects. We're just not that way. And if you got that kind of image in your mind as how things are going to work out, it's a very unrealistic picture of life. And it's going to make a tough time for your... give your husband a tough time. Not only that, if you're trying to maintain, or if you're committed to maintaining a pure courtship, that kind of reading material is going to make it very difficult for you to do that. Because those kind of things are not practiced in those books. So be careful what you read and what you feed your mind with. Sometimes you have struggles in courtship. There are things to work through. Life isn't always going to be easy, so courtship won't necessarily always be easy. Look at differences. Some of those differences are real big, and sometimes you have differences as far as where you're going to go to church, you know, after you get married. Of course, this is a little bit later in the relationship, but I believe that it's important that a young lady, a young man, a couple, if they're dating, they need to be thinking about where they're going to church. Too many have made the mistake of waiting until after the marriage to decide where they're going to church. It's not a good plan. Work it out beforehand. And if the church differences are too great, it may just not work. Some of those things need to be figured out beforehand, or you're going to have a problem. Give yourselves a little room. You know, you come from different homes and different communities, sometimes from different countries. And you get together and you wonder why there's problems that work through. Well, I guess we have to be realistic. There's differences in people and families and countries, and sometimes it doesn't work out. But you work at them together, you can work a lot of problems out together. If you must part, if it doesn't work out, and use all kinds of stories, I mean, experiences. A young couple has a date, one date, and it's done. I've heard of that. You know, they just, one date, you knew it wasn't going to work somehow. And I wonder about that sometimes, how it could be the Lord's will to start dating, and you spend 2 hours together, and it's done. I think maybe there should be a little more time given than that. But if you must part, you get to the place where it's not working, and you have to break it up. Do it graciously. Be careful. There's feelings involved, and it's tough. But do it graciously. Be kind about it. As you're dating, it's working out. And here's sometimes there's bigger problems. Don't forget to address. Don't forget that dating is not your whole life. Probably you've seen couples who, when they start dating, suddenly they drop all the rest of their friends and it's just them. That's sum total. That's it. It's going to make a problem. Your friends are going to feel left out. It's not fair to them. They've been your friends for years and years. And suddenly someone comes along, you've known for 2 weeks or 2 months, and you drop all your friends, mostly, and you've got one. It's not good for your friends. It's not good for your relationship. And it's not good for you either. I've recently noticed a couple like that, and I wonder what's going to happen after they're married, you know? Suddenly they're going to realize, I think, they're going to need some more friends again. They're going to realize that life is more than your husband or your wife. It's just more than that. And so be careful about that. I really appreciate, and I didn't always do this, but I do appreciate when I see it. Some couples do it with a greater degree of success than others. There are couples that... oh, you know they're together, you know they're dating, but it's not all that obvious. They're not having to be together all the time, you know. It's not, they're interested in other people. They're interested in spending time with the rest of their friends. And we appreciate that kind of thing. You know, if it's, how's that saying? Make new friends, keep the old. One is silver, the other gold. They're both valuable, and you don't want to trash the one or trade in the one for the other. It's not your whole life. Sometimes we have to be willing to sacrifice personal activities for the sake of relationship. I don't know so much what the ladies do, but for the men, sometimes that's things like hunting. You know, personally, I kind of feel sorry for a wife who has to stay at home for a week when her husband's out in the mountains hunting with a cabin with a whole bunch of other men. Somehow that doesn't quite seem right. Now, I suppose you're not doing that out here because you've got the mountains right in your backyard. You just have to walk out back, and that's nice. I would encourage, I certainly don't have a problem with that. But there are, you know, when you take up, you become involved with another person, especially someone you want to be your wife in the future, you're making a commitment to that person. And some of those personal things that may have been okay, maybe they weren't okay, you just have to prioritize and sacrifice some of those things for the good of the larger picture. Group activities, I think it's good to be a part of a group. Well, there's more could be said, I think, but I think probably except for just a few things here at the end here, I'd like to share just this yet, and then I'm going to close. We live in a perverse world. And so we have to be careful. I would like to encourage you young ladies to be very, very careful. You young men as well. In our communities, we're fairly sheltered yet. We get into the market there at Reading, and why I'm missing. And my eyes have been opened a bit with some of the things that I've observed over the last, we've been there about 4 years now. A lot of weird things going on out there. You kind of develop an eye for it because you start seeing it, and then you notice it after a while. And right now, the last, just about 2 weeks ago, I noticed this couple coming in. And it's nothing unusual for two ladies to walk in, or two men, but there was two men walked in one day, and later that week there was two ladies walked in, and something strange about those couples. I didn't ask any questions, and I'm not necessarily going to make any judgments because I don't know for sure, but there was some weird things going on there. The way they dressed and the way they related to each other and the things they said to each other. I'm saying that to say this. There's a lot of perversion out there. And we have to be careful. Be careful. And we have to help each other. Not only are we responsible to help each other stay pure in a courtship relationship, I would like for you men to realize that you've got a responsibility in keeping the sisters pure, in protecting them. Now, I'm not talking about walking alongside with a billy club. You know, if anybody gets handy or anything, why, we'll take care of them. Not that kind of thing. But we can protect our sisters personally. You know, if we look at our sisters as a sister side. Okay, we look at the sister side of the room, and we say, I'm going to treat them and look out for them like I would my little sister, okay? Or my mom. It's going to change the way you look at things. And so, brothers, protect your sisters. You got a sister? Protect her. And you girls, you listen to your brothers. I'm talking about blood brothers now, okay? The others probably won't say too much, but fellows have a feel for some things that maybe you don't. And so if they say, listen, be careful with that fellow, you listen to him. You'll do yourself a favor. And vice versa as well. You know, if your sister tells you that be careful with that young lady, then you do that. And we need to look at, I'm not trying to start all of us looking crooked at each other or anything, you know. But I think we have to be careful. We have to be concerned about each other. Because we're living in a perverse world. Help each other. Some terrible things happen when we're not careful. And sometimes they happen anyway. But let's be careful. And if you've been taken advantage of, if you've been sinned against, I encourage you to find help. Find help. Go to someone you trust and talk about it. You need help to get beyond those things. And those things do happen, I'm aware. Time to quit. I have a little story here. Story, it's a letter. And this, I did not write this, but I was tremendously challenged with it, and so I'd like to share it with you. Actually, it was written by Michael Overholt, and it was shared with the group at the church there at RBS. Michael has a number of daughters as well, so I kind of relate to this story, this letter. And it's written to a young man who is seeking his daughter's friendship. Dear young man, so you want to date my daughter. Let me tell you just a little bit about the kind of young man I'm looking for. You see, this isn't just any girl. This is my daughter, and she's pretty special. And the young man that wins her heart will have to be special too. Of course, it's understood he'll have to be a Christian. But for my daughter's husband, it doesn't stop there. He must not only be saved, he must also be sanctified. He must know what it's like to walk daily with his Lord. He must value the church. He must know what it is to do things because of personal convictions, even when others around him don't see it as he does. He must also know what it is to do things for which he has no personal conviction, simply and cheerfully doing those things because the church brethren ask it of him. For him, the church body must count more than individual expression. His lifestyle needs to match his profession. He mustn't listen to the radio on the sly or keep a Facebook account at the library. He will not attend the ball game every Monday night. His personal possessions shall speak of being a pilgrim and stranger in this world and to the things of this world. He must have a handle on his personal finances. His vehicle must be paid for, or he must trade it in for one that matches his finances. He doesn't need to be rich, but he needs to be responsible. He must know how to save appropriately and give generously. He will not spend excessively on hunting gear nor on foolish recreation. He doesn't need to be particularly smart or even know how to sing, but he must be surrendered and know how to serve. He needs to know how to walk in the rain, work in the cold, and plow by the light of the moon. He will open the door in courtesy to his mother. He will offer the shelter of his patched umbrella to the old lady on the street. He must be morally pure. Present involvement with 30 magazines automatically disqualifies him. Past involvement with dirty literature can be forgiven, but he will have to prove himself before he goes out with my daughter. And if he ever two times on my daughter during courtship, he's history. He must know how to dream big, breaking free of past failures, entering into the glories of the bright tomorrow. He must have courage and wisdom to face hard times, criticism, and prosperity, and yet not lose his integrity nor compromise his principles. So you still want to date my daughter. Know this then, that I'm already praying for you. However, if after considering this letter, you think someone has strange ideas about life and marriage, you may decide it's better for you to keep on looking elsewhere for that future honey. If that's your take on it, don't worry. I'm not offended. The feeling is mutual. Sincerely, Papa. I like that little letter because it spoke my heart. You know, we're not playing games. Well, we are playing a game, aren't we? We're making some serious moves here, and we don't want games. We want serious young men and young women getting together to build godly Christian homes, and that's the only way it's going to happen if we're serious about it. May God bless you. Let's stand for a word of prayer.